please give a warm welcome from Texas, Myers.
Howdy, y'all. Can you hear me okay? My name is Myers Raymer, and I'm a very, very, very grateful recovered alcoholic. It's so weird. A couple of months ago, I did a talk in Dallas for Dallas Citywide. It was just a bunch of groups that got together and put together this deal like this. And I don't think I knew as many people in that group. I've been there for 30-some-odd years, and I don't think I knew as many people as I know here. It's like coming home here. Somebody said, you know any Yankees? Yeah, I know more Yankees than I know people in Texas. Pretty cool. I don't know how you live here. I got to tell you, it's so big. I mean, people say, oh, from Texas, everything is big. Listen, we ain't got crap compared to you guys. I mean, this is, drive it riding in on that airplane and looking down at all the stuff like that. And I mean, even the graveyards are crowded. I mean, from the air anyway, it looked like you couldn't put a credit card between those tombstones. I mean, it was just real thin little, wow, pretty amazing like that. So if I get lost, y'all come get me. I don't know whether it's just me getting older. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know. I tend to these days really like doing this. And as much as I like doing this, that's how much I dislike doing one-night talks, where I'm just going to walk in, do a talk. And I was talking to a guy, a new friend of mine in Sweden. And I've been working with him online for the last, I don't know, maybe month and a half. And he called me the other day and he said, he emailed me and he said, hey, I heard a talk that you did where you said that you couldn't have a spiritual experience until you had done all of your amends. And I said, Hoss, you better check that talk again, because those words have never come out of my mouth. And he calls me back later, he emails me back later, and he says, you're right, I heard it wrong. And so my point is that oftentimes people will hear stuff. I did a talk one time in Fort Worth, and I got done, and this lady walked up right up on the podium and pulled me off the podium with my necktie. I mean, just pulled me off onto the ground. And I went, well, lady, whoa, what's going on? And she goes, I can't tell you how mad I am. And she really was. I mean, she was physically just shaking. She was so mad. And I said, what did I say that got you so upset? And she said, well, you said, and then she starts just, and I guess the guy that had asked me to do the talk was standing right there. And I looked at him and I said, hey, Sid, I didn't say any of that stuff. And he goes, I know. And he looked at this girl and he goes, he didn't say any of that stuff. And she goes, oh, and just turned around and walked off. All that to say, I don't know what you hear, and this is the reason, if we're here for a weekend and I say something that got you kind of going like, what's he talking about? We can talk. We have plenty of breaks and we have plenty of time to that's why I love this kind of stuff. Now, before I get started, I want to thank Mark and crew for doing this. It takes an amazing amount of work. I remember years ago being part of a bunch of guys that met for a men's retreat, and I remember I was always real critical and real judgmental about every decision that they made. And then one day they said, Myers, how about you chair this next year? And I went, no problem, Hoss, I got this, man. And then I spent a year wringing my hands and worrying and fretting and bad stomach, bad bowels, bad everything like this, because I guess it just takes a lot of work. And so I have profound respect for anybody that will step up and take this kind of responsibility. What we're going to do, just so some of you guys got kind of big-eyed a minute ago when he said we're going to be three speakers tonight. I'm going to talk for like 40 minutes, 38 and a half, something like that. I'm a trained professional, guys. I'm watching the clock. Guys, I'm married to a smoker for 35 years, and I recognize the look, okay? I mean, you don't even have to say anything. I can see in the way you squirm and the way you're moving and this kind of stuff. Like, we'll go take a fast smoke break and come back in, and then we'll listen to Chris and other Chris. Pretty cool. I'm always grateful to do this with Chris Raymer. Because I always get a chance to tell everybody how grateful I am that I got sober. Not once, but twice did Chris save my life in AA, and so it's always an important deal. Chris sobered up in November of '87, and he took me to my first AA meeting 2 months later. of which he will always remember and remind me. And it's like Myers, when you get to be sober as long as me, you'll understand this stuff. And I know. But I was grateful that he took me to AA first. I was grateful that he took me there. But my biggest thing was, guys, is that he, that 7 years into this gig, he saved my life again because he scooped up what was left of me sitting in the rooms. I didn't get loaded, but I got crazy as a crap house rat, and he scooped me up, and I will always be grateful for that. That he had been trying to tell me for quite some time. And the reason I need to talk about that stuff some is because it defines my experience, so to speak, in the rooms. I'm so excited sometimes when I meet people who I've been sober for 35 years and it's been just a swell time and this kind of stuff. And I just get so excited when I hear people say that. That was not my story. I came in here and for 2 years I thought it was the coolest thing in the universe, and then not so cool, and then kind of a crap hole. I mean, it was just not fun. And then pretty soon it was just something where I was just struggling to stay alive. Isn't it weird that all those times out there in booze and sometimes dope land, isn't it crazy that all that time out there like that, I never one time considered killing myself? And here I am almost 3 weeks shy of being 7 years sober. It's the only thing I can think about every day. Let the taping record show that we got a whole bunch of people shaking yes. I golly, I love you already. I know that meeting makers make it, but some do, but some don't. And we just need to talk about it a little bit. We're not going to beat it up. We just need to talk about it. Anyhow, I'm a third generation drunk. There's some evidence that my great grandfather was a drunk and my father was a drunk. I'm and the evil twin Chris is. I've got a sister that's not, two sisters that's not, and a mom that wasn't, and I just got a genetic bullet, and there it was, and it manifested like this. And I knew, I swore I was never going to drink, and then I drank one day, and I went, "Holy cow, that's the coolest stuff in the whole wide world!" And connected all this weird stuff up, and I was kind of off to the races. I remember Chris and I sitting in a place called the Mason Jar in Houston, Texas, when we were 21 years old, the first legal drink that we could ever take in Texas at the time. And I remember sitting there, and we were both squashed, and I remember looking at him and going, "Chris, we're drunks just like Pop, right?" And he goes, "Yep." And I went, "What are we going to do?" And he said, "Eventually we're going to have to quit." But not now. And I totally understand that. I mean, I just, why when it's working this way it's working, why would you even consider that? And so, oh my gosh. I work at a treatment center down south and in South Texas. Right before you go into Mexico, I work down there for 10 days out of the month, and then I go home. And so, you can throw a Coke can and hit Mexico from where we are on this little island down there. And I was doing a family lecture day before yesterday. And when I got done with this lecture, there was a guy standing there and another guy behind him, and there were a couple of people behind that. And the first guy stands up. He said, "I've been sober for 28 years. And I went, "Well, good. And I know what's coming. I said something that pissed him off in the family lecture, and now he's going to be mad." And he said, "You know, I hate to admit this, but in all the years I've been in this room, I've never heard what you talked about, but you and me need to talk more." And I went, "Groovy. I love that." And then he moved out of the way, and the very next guy that was standing there said, "You know, I kind of heard what he said. Same that." He said, "Except I've been sober 36 years," and I went, I get this. I understand. I mean, I understand. But to these days, guys, our rooms seem to be a sea of men and women who have, not everywhere, but geographically it sometimes happens that way, where you end up with just people who have just drifted sideways and nobody caught them. And so now their pride and their ego is in the middle of it like that. I'm a poster boy for ego and pride. I can tell you, I don't want to tell anybody I don't understand this crap. I don't want to tell anybody that it's not working. I don't want to tell anybody that I'm dying every morning when I get up, that I hate my wife and I hate my job and I hate my kids and I hate you. If you'll slow down long enough, I'll tell you. I don't want to tell people that. The reality of it is that you see it all the time. This is the reason why so many of us kill ourselves in the rooms, why we see so many people that just make that ultimate sacrifice, and we want to talk about that stuff some. Guys, I just, sometimes we find ourselves in this situation where it's like there's this 500-pound naked guy that's sitting in the room and nobody wants to look at him. We're just kind of like looking the other way, and there's obvious things going on, but we don't want to talk about it. And I'm not going to beat it up, and we're not going to spend a bunch of time, but there are some things that we just simply got to talk about a little bit and see if we can't kind of get everybody heading in the same direction. Remember in the big book, they on page 17, they're talking about this common solution. The fact that we're all drunks is a groovy thing. The fact that stuff will kind of help hold us all together. And then Bill goes on to say that never would have held us together like we're now joined. The fact is that we've discovered this common solution. And so for years and years and years, I just didn't know what that common solution looked like. I thought it was just simply the meeting. That's the common thread that joins every one of us, is the meeting. And the story that is similar, kind of this sort of thing. But I was wrong. I was wrong. I remember when Chris sobered up, I was not happy that he did, and I didn't want him to die, but I didn't want him to get sober. If you can understand that, he's my best drinking buddy, and we daily solve the world's problems. Let me ask you a question: any of you guys ever take a brand new legal pad? It's got to be brand new, no sheets tore off of it yet. A brand new virgin legal pad and a brand new pencil, and sit down, and you're going to solve every problem there is to solve like that. It seemed like we were doing it like every other day, and it just like, in this drunken haze, we would be trying to figure out a way to solve every problem that we had. And it was just, so when he decides to get sober, I remember Chris getting up at Thanksgiving dinner, when he first sobered up. I remember him standing up. He'd been sober a couple of weeks, and I remember him walking toward the door, and I went, "Oh, Chris, where's your big book?" Like this, and I'm just a jerk. I'm just making fun of him like this. And Chris says, "I got it in the truck. See ya." And just walked out. Now, he never fought back, and he never tried to sell me the idea of recovery. He never tried to go, "Hey, you could." He didn't. You see, I've already been in trouble a couple of times with the law for putting my hands on people when I was angry, and I'm starting to put my hands on my family. I'm not proud of that kind of stuff. I just angry, real scared all the time. I remember one day working on a little tractor out by the house, and Chris is, it's a little lawn tractor thing. It's not a tractor. That's a man thing. Mine's just a little wimpy little lawn tractor. But I'm doing some work on it like this, and I keep dropping screws in the grass and losing them, and I'm getting madder and madder and madder. My face is beet red. I've been drinking all day. My gut's sticking way out here. I weigh 168 pounds today. I weighed 205 pounds when that was going on. It was all sitting right here. And it was like, Chris is sitting over there on a stump with a glass of iced tea just watching me, and finally I'm shaking this thing, trying to turn it over. I'm so mad. I'm thinking, if I could just throw it across the street, maybe I could just buy a new one. And I remember Chris got up, and he kind of scratched for a second like this, and he just looked at me, and he said, you don't have to live like this if you don't want to. And then he turned around and walked back toward the house. And I don't know, it was just a weird feeling, guys. It was just this, he could not have spoken it more plainly. And then it occurred to me that maybe there was a way I didn't have to do this. I remember walking back in the house and asking him if he could take me to A&A, that A&A thing. And he said, yeah, he would. And he did. It was the bomb. I stayed and I loved it, and I fell in love with everybody there, and I fell in love with your stories. I fell in love with everything that was going on, and I stayed happy for a number of years, and then it gradually started to come apart, and then everybody gets sort of amazed. My wife had finally invited me back down to the big bed down the hall, and I had been in the little bed. We'd be in the same house, but we were at two ends of the house, and so she finally said, "Well, come on back," and then I remember her having a conversation one night, and she said, "Myers, maybe we ought to go back to that you down there, and I'll just stay here type thing again like this, because I'm getting crazy again." I mean, guys, it's a weird deal when your family sees you getting sober, and then 5-6 years into the gig, you're nutty as a squirrel turd. She doesn't know, where is it coming from? Why is it that he's so crazy all of a sudden? Why is it that he's making bad decisions? You see, why is it that he's spending money all over? I'm spending money I don't even have. I'm spending two families worth of money like that on stupid stuff, tools I don't need, music I don't listen to. Chris Schroeder, music I don't listen to like that. You can relate, brother. You know. I mean, at least you listen to it. It's getting to a place to where every girl in the rooms looks better than my wife. Now, guys, if you want to stay married, I'm just telling you right now, that's a bad, bad place to be. It truly is. And then he finally introduces me to Krusty Cliff, and Krusty's the Cliff Bishop, and I bust his anonymity every chance I get. I just Cliff Bishop saved my life. He was just a crusty old dude, and he wasn't going to take any crap from me like this. He kept asking me stuff like, "Where's your big book?" And I said, "I don't know, sir. I hadn't seen it, and I didn't even know where my big book was. I hadn't seen it in forever." And he would just. I finally told him that I didn't know what he was talking about. I didn't understand. Y'all ever notice how we get like that? If you're left unchecked in AA rooms for very long, your ego will step in there like this, and then you'll never, ever, ever tell anybody that you don't understand that stuff. And so here I am, 7 years sober, just shy of 7 years sober, and he's asking me questions, and I don't know the answers to them, but I can't admit to him that I've been in the rooms for 7 years and don't know the answer. And so I just make up stuff, hoping that I'm close. And it was just a mess. And so eventually I just said, stop, enough with the charades. I don't know the answer to these questions. And he said, we're finally making some progress. He said, why don't you come to the meeting tomorrow night and we'll get started. And I walk in and there's a bunch of big book guys. They don't have any discussion meetings. They got 3 meetings a week. They're all big book studies. And we're studying the text. And I'm trying to turn every one of them into a discussion meeting because that's all I know. I mean, that's all I know. I mean, we're studying something that basically I go, I know Bill felt like that. But, you know, for me, and I just got like that, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, well, in my case, it's just like, and they're just going like, no, just get him out of here. Get the hook like this. And they don't dig me too much. And frankly, I don't dig in them too much either. I mean, I don't. Cliff Bishop gets up one night and he's way over across the room and we're having this book study and I'd been trying to add some wit to the room. It was just a mess. And Dara was the gal that was chairing that night and she was trying to avoid me. She was looking everywhere and I was back over there going, Dara, I know that. And she goes, okay, Myers, go ahead. And then I said something stupid. I mean, I have no clue what she was talking about, and I was just trying to be funny. And I saw Clifford get up, and I thought, he's walking right toward me, right in the middle of the meeting, and I'm thinking, he kind of digs what I said, I bet, like that. And he took a note that was all wadded up like this, and he threw it and hit the table like you know when somebody's throwing something at you? I mean, this thing hit the table, hit me in the chest, and then fell off onto the floor. And I remember reaching down and picking it up, and I'm kind of looking around to see who's looking. Everybody's looking at me. And I open it up, and it says, why don't you shut up until you know what's in the big book? I'm not feeling any love, but I didn't understand. I didn't understand what it was that was going on. I didn't understand that by simply learning some of this stuff, I could take some of the weirdness out of the middle of this thing like that. It's like starting in the 70s when treatment got going real strong. I'm not blaming nothing on treatment. I'm just saying we ended up with a whole bunch of people coming into our fellowship at one time, and we ended up with a whole bunch of people. Some of them were all sweet. They were all super people, but some of them didn't belong here. And so if you got a real alcoholic and somebody that's not a real alcoholic sitting in the same room sharing, they're not always going to talk about the same thing because they don't need a spiritual experience to recover. They don't need this sort of thing. And so this is the problem that we got into. And so when I came up in the late 80s and early 90s, that's what was going on. We just had a whole bunch of people that were the nicest people. I'd take a bullet for those people. They were so nice. There wasn't a jerk in the bunch like this. But with... Myers, let me make a suggestion. You know what you could do that would be really, really effective with your recovery stuff? Why don't you just practice yoga? Yoga is a good thing. And I'm not ragging on yoga. I'm just saying like that. But these are the suggestions that I'm getting like that. Maybe you just need to do this. Maybe you need to do that. Maybe you need to do that. Nobody is suggesting the steps. Nobody is suggesting that I get a sponsor that knew what he was talking about. Nobody is suggesting anything except just maybe... Myers, I hate to say this, but maybe you're one of those kind of guys that just needs to be to a meeting every day. Guys, I'm already going to 6 meetings a day. How many does it take? How many? I don't understand. My heart bleeds for people that are struggling in our rooms. We have never, ever, ever had problems getting people to come to our fellowship. But we got a heck of a time keeping them here sometimes, depending on where you are. I know some of you guys are good, like not me. Uh-uh, we got this. Rock on. Some of you guys are so lucky that you're in places where people have been talking big book and talking stuff to you like that from the beginning. Some of us miss that boat completely. And this is the stuff that we'll talk about just a little bit and see. God, you remember, what was that cat's name? Charlie Sheen. You remember him? Okay, so I'll probably get in trouble for mentioning his whole name sometime, but this has been 8 years ago probably. People started calling me and asking me, hey, did you see that article? Did you see that article? Did you see that interview? Did you see this like this? And I'm going, and some of them I had seen, and they didn't paint a very good picture of recovery. And then somebody sent me an article, and the article was just a bullet point thing of the things he thought were stupid. And they said, well, we ought to maybe write a letter to him. And everybody that sent me the email, sent me the article, were pissed. Everybody was mad because of what he was saying. And then I looked at it and I looked at it and I went, yeah, I'm mad too. And then I looked at it again and I went, wait a minute. He didn't make anything this up. None of this stuff was made up. What he's reporting is exactly what he'd been taught. And so you look at it through somebody else's eyes and all of a sudden it looks as crazy as it sounds, but that's what he learned, you see? And so, I couldn't fault him. Somewhere along the line, as a fellowship, we're going to have to kind of get gathered up a little bit and get on the same page and try to help some folks see and understand that this is not some weird, whacked-out cult. And where we start is, we start by making it not look like a whacked-out cult. And we'll talk about that stuff some, okay? We will. We'll get there. One of the coolest things that happened was the... Clifford got me back in the work again, and I say again, he got me back in the work for the very first time. So I'm 7 years and I'm doing the work for the very first time, and I have this profound experience 3 weeks into the deal. I'm less than a month into it, and I had this experience that just changes me completely like that. I remember walking home one night real quiet, and I walked in the front door, and my wife is sitting there like this, and we talked for a little bit, and she looked at me a second and she said, okay, so I haven't met these guys that you're in the new group yet. I don't know them really, and this sort of thing, but I'm telling you, you haven't raised your voice since you started going over there, and you're calmer, and I can't see any dishonesty anywhere in you, and you're sober still, which is kind of groovy too, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is pretty cool. But it occurred to me that there were things that were beginning to happen to me that just kind of blew me away. One of the things, guys, that I found once I started working this work was that I started caring about who I was as a man, as an individual, character-wise. Now, I'm telling you guys, in the middle of addiction, I understand why most of us don't care who we are or what we are. I mean, I don't care. I don't care anything about my character. I don't care anything about my how I'm perceived. I don't care. The problem with this stuff is, guys, is that a lot of us got here and ignored the work, and we missed that part. And the cool part about this stuff is that I've watched lots of guys my age that I've worked with, had the great honor of working with over the years, who reworked the work, had this experience, and then our conversation on the phone sounds like this. Hey, Myers, I know this is going to sound weird. I mean, I can't even hardly say it, but I think I'm finally starting to grow up. And I'm going, I get, I know, I understand that. I completely understand that. And so this idea of being authentic and who we are and what we are and what we stand for, these are huge deals. I'm always delighted that we're sober, guys. Don't ever get me wrong. I'm always delighted that we draw a sober breath. But much more important these days, I care that we are the men that we were supposed to be, that we are the women that we were intended to be, that we could be great dads, that we could be great husbands, that we could do the things with some integrity. Pretty amazing. I mean, I never knew. Nobody ever said in a meeting, if you'll do this, you'll get some integrity. They didn't say that. But that's exactly what happened. That's what began to come about. And so I will spend some time talking about that stuff some, because I think it's important. Most of you guys will get that. The Clifford came up to me one day after I'd been there, I don't know, maybe 6 months, and I've become Clifford's book boy. So this is what it looks like. If we're going to go to the Salvation Army, I'll drive his car. I'll carry his little books and stuff with him like this, and we'll get over there, and then he'll do his little pitch and whatever he's going to do. And then when he gets done, I'll gather up all the books and this kind of stuff, and then we'll get out of there, and that's it. You see, there's a little teeny tiny piece called 12-step work that I'm not even remotely interested in doing. I heard a guy 3-4 months sober. When I heard him, I was 3 or 4 months sober, that said... he's from a big fancy group in Dallas, and I remember him saying, from a podium, he said, there are good 12-steppers and there are bad 12-steppers, and if you're not a good 12-stepper, you really, really, really don't have any business doing this. And I went, but I love you. Because I'm convinced that I'm not going to be a good 12-stepper. I'm never going to be good at this. I'm always going to be lacking in that area. I'm not smart. And so I'm just convinced I'm not going to be able to do it. And so I just stayed completely away from it. I don't care if you sponsor somebody. That's groovy. And if I'll go help Clifford, I'm going to be involved in service work. I'm just going to drive his car. I'll empty some ashtrays or something like that. I'm not going to do any of this other stuff. And finally, it got to a place to where Cliff said, I'm concerned about you. Because I don't think you're going to get any better than you are right now. And I said, man, I'm way better than I was. He said, I know. They're not going to lock you up now for being crazy. But I got to tell you, you're still a lot of things that you don't understand about what it is we're doing. And I said, well, what do you suggest I do? And I remember him looking at me, and he got real kind of like, you got to be kidding me. Like, we've had this conversation before. I don't know. I don't recall it. And he said, you got to get involved. You got to get involved carrying a message. And I said, I go with you. I mean, how involved do I need to be? And he said, like, be willing to sponsor. I mean, he said, you've been here now 6 months, and you're still not sponsoring people. Myers, you're 7.5 years sober, and you still haven't sponsored anybody. Well, I don't want to kill them. I don't want to hurt them. He said, But listen, guys, let me just tell you, I get that. I mean, I understand that like that. I think Bob Darrell says it's best. We're the fly in our own ointment. Left on my own devices, guys, I'll always tell myself that I am less than, that I can't do what needs to be done, that I'm not going to be able to do what you expect me to do. And the result of that is that it's an easy sell for a head that doesn't want to be uncomfortable, for an ego that doesn't want to be put like this. I'll buy it hook, line, and sinker. I'll just stay completely out of that stuff and leave that to the good guys that know what they're doing. Wow. They finally trick me and make me go to this place, and I'm not going to get into that story, but they tricked me. They just didn't show up. I mean, I went over there expecting them to all be there, and they weren't there, you see. No, that's okay, Myers. I'll drive my car tonight. I'll see you over there. And I get over there, and the jerk's not there. Nobody's there. And so I'm left to try to do that little gig over there at Salvation Army. A sea of men that make me really, really nervous in this big old room, and I have to do something. And so I go find someplace quiet, do me a little prayer, walk back in there, sweat my rear end off, and do this little deal. And at the end of this thing, people are responding, and people are saying things, and people are asking me to sponsor them. People are like, and I'm just going like, holy cow, what did I create? I mean, I got this nightmare here like this. You don't think I was on the cell phone going home that night like, Clifford, what am I going to do? I don't know. You know what to do. You find a way to do this stuff, guys, and you can do it. I want to I want to be clear. These steps and the stuff we're going to talk about tomorrow that we're going to get into, guys, there are some disciplines of this thing. Let me put it to you this way. In my job, at this little part-time job that I've got down at this treatment place, I work in their alumni department, and so I'm talking to drunks all day long when I'm down there. I'm talking to all kinds of guys that leave like that. And you kind of get a window of what recovery looks like when people are new, and you know, after a while you sponsor enough people, you start gleaning some information and putting that stuff together. And what I began to find out was that somebody said one time that there was we're the only group of people on the face of God's green earth that takes what works and then stops doing it. And I see the evidence of that. I see the evidence of that every day when I'm on the telephone talking to these guys like that. I mean, they come in two schools, guys that are either practicing the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12 and doing the things that they're growing and deepening that relationship with their creator, and they're okay. They're hitting. I mean, it's a swing and a hit. And then you have those other guys who life has gotten to be a crap storm again. Their lives are just in turmoil, and you ask them what they're doing. You ask them what's going on. You ask them if they're involved, if they're sponsoring, and this kind of stuff. And the answer is no, 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 no. I intend to. I for sure intend to, but I haven't yet. Like that, we always get the cart before the horse sometimes. And I just, it's crazy. I can't judge it because I did the same thing. I did exactly the same thing. And so we're going to talk about it some, because I just think, guys, when we do this stuff, certainly I do, I can't hardly ever talk about the things that we're going to talk about tomorrow that I don't talk about it from the perspective of sponsorship, because sponsorship is the holy grail for me. It's like everything that I needed, all of those self-help books that I used to buy and have on my shelf like this, and it seemed like I had hundreds of them like that. Every one of them pales in comparison to the things that I've learned in the arena of working with crazy little knuckleheads that are struggling with this stuff and needing help. And the funny part about it is that so many of the men that I work with these days are 50 years or older. 60 years or older. I sponsor two men right now that are in their 70s, and we have more fun with those guys. I'm not going to tell you what I call them, because it's insulting as hell. But they crack me up. They truly do crack me up like this. And they, when they got to me, they weren't sponsoring anybody. One guy had sponsored one guy. I got a guy right now that I sponsor that has been sober for 38 years, and he'd never ever sponsored anybody, ever, in 38 years. He sponsors six or seven guys now within the last year that he's gotten all caught up like this. And it's like talking to a 12-year-old when you talk to him on the telephone. It's like, oh, God, Myers, let me just like him. He called me the other night at 11:30 at night. He said, Myers, I just got finished doing this fifth step with a guy. And he's like on, like he's been hitting the meth pipe. And I'm going, Hoss, quit. You're killing me, man. What just... He's just all jacked up, just really excited about what it is that's happening to his life like that. I'm just like, man, how cool is that, that we can go through that stuff? One more real quick thing, and then I'll get down here and we'll go smoke a butt real quick. It's so hard for me to explain sometimes how things change. I remember in the old days, before I met Clifford, before I met anybody that was going to try to help me learn what the text, I remember always being frustrated, always being scared, always being, you know, I'm going to go to a meeting and that'll take care of it for a few minutes, and I'll go home and then the anxiety will come back, and I'm fighting this anxiety stuff that's just kicking my rear end, I left my car in a freeway twice in 1 week, week and a half period of time like that. I just couldn't stand to be in the car. I just got out and walked back on the shoulder of the road. People don't like it when you do that. Whether you're in Dallas or whether you're in New York, they don't like it when you leave your car in the middle of a freeway. But my anxiety is killing me, I spent so many years not wanting to go to work. I spent so many years not really liking. I love my wife, and I've always loved my wife, but I didn't want to be around her much. I didn't really feel. My kids drive me to distraction. I don't want to be around them. And I got three of the greatest kids, little girls, and they're not little anymore. They're all great big old big. Freaks me out. And an old dude named Clifford scoops me up, doesn't like me, but loves me enough to tell me the truth about what it is that's going on. And he makes me do things I don't want to do and holds me accountable. And I find that things begin to change. Things get to a place to where I remember sitting out in front of my house one day playing in my garden, and I'm all kind of nervous again, and I thought, oh, crap, that anxiety's coming back. It's coming back. And I got real nervous a second, and I went, wait a minute. This isn't anxiety. This is just excitement. Big difference. And I went, what the heck, you know? And I got thinking about it, and I just sat there on a rock for a couple of minutes and looked out across this little garden that I'm trying to put in there, and I'm thinking, you know, it's the coolest. In a couple of minutes, I get to go in and be in the room with a woman that I absolutely adore. I get to be around kids that I love more than anything in the whole wide world. I get to get up and go to work at 4:30 in the morning to a business that I absolutely can't get enough of. And the question that I've got to ask, the question that I always needs to be asked is that what had to change in order for that to happen? Did my wife have to change? Did my daughters have to change? Did anything change in that old bookbinder that I own? Did anything change there? Same old stuff, guys. What changed was my perception of all of it. Because I was willing to get up, go help some of God's kids, and then see what happens. I know it doesn't make sense. I know intellectually you want something more. That's just tough shit. It ain't going to happen. I don't know. I can't connect it up intellectually. I tried and tried and tried. I can't connect it up. But it's pretty special for a crusty old guy like me who couldn't put much of any kind of a life together to be able to go do the things that I've been able to do and be around the people that I've been able to be around. To be in a room full of Yankees, pretty special. Pretty special. I love that stuff. Thank you, guys. I'll see y'all in the morning.
We're going to start up at 7 o'clock. Enjoy your cigarettes.